Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. We're losing every day that passes by, we're losing the opportunity to take our government back. Now, believe it or not, we have been lured down this path. Believe it or not, it's fraudulent, even though we don't know what to do about it. And they've been telling us they can do anything and everything. And everybody that seems to know, you know, as a definitive, oh, we're smarter than you, continually tell you, oh, yeah, we can do whatever we want to do. Well, of course. If you're a child that can obtain that type of latitude in your home, you will do everything you can. And if you're smart, if that child is a genius, then that child would not kill the parents because he needs the parents, because that's where the money comes from. That's where the food comes from. I mean, a child can't drive. So a child would need to literally be able to manipulate the entire home. Now, we've seen sci-fis, whether it be Outer Limits or whether it be Twilight Zone, where a child has mind control, has the ability to control an adult. We've seen all sorts of episodes like that. And that's what's happened in America. They created this federal government that was limited and defined, and it could only do these very specific things. And though there were a few outliers, or there were a few events that occurred that were not, that did not contain government. In other words, government got out on one little issue like the bank and the Assumption Act. And so it pushed these little boundaries, but it didn't just wipe out the Constitution and just, you know, establish a monarchy or this all-powerful government we have today. Because had that happened so quickly, the people would have just taken up arms and the government itself would have been absolutely obliterated. Because at that point, they didn't have an army. At that point, all of the states were, the federal government was dependent on the states to surrender their army to them. So they had to create this good relationship, and over time, they had to convince the states to let them do whatever it is they need to do. Trust us. We know what we're doing, and we'll take care of you. Trust us. And today, they are killing us, driving us off the cliff or off the precipice. So how foolish are we to think we can trust them? We have to take this back. So we have to actually understand, what authority do they really have? Do they have this authority to have this standing military as well as these standing armies? When I say standing armies and military, they're two different things. The military is the Army, the Air Force, the DOD that has become permanent. In other words, when they started going down this path to say, this is so important, we need to keep this military, that we are not going to scuttle this. And because of the world wars and because we were the ones that were keeping the world in check, that was never our job. Now, it is our job to protect our interests, but at least for the Army, it was never the job of the Army and the Air Force to do this. Now, it's one thing if the Navy and the Marine Corps was doing this, but it's completely a different game altogether when they're off, because the Navy and the Marine Corps, they do have the authority in the Constitution to be operating 24/7 and to be maintained. The Army and the Air Force, which is where the Air Force came from, was the Army. The intent behind this, and this is why we covered the Constitution, we just covered this. Go listen to the Constitution, you know, coverage. It's been Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, every week since the 17th of September. So we covered this, that the federal government has to federalize the militia to create the army. That is the source of the army. For them to create a mercenary force, they don't have the ability. There's nowhere in there that says, oh, well, if you need to create a mercenary force, a full-time army that you just hire and all of this other stuff, then, you know, you have to do this or do that. There's no guidance whatsoever. And the intent behind the militia was to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and to repel invasions. That's it. It was a homeland defense. The external defense system was the Navy and the Marine Corps. That's it. So when they started creating this military and operating, and what they did was they used the cavalry to, you know, to protect themselves instead of actually creating and ensuring that the militia did what it was supposed to do in the territories and so forth. Because technically, in every state that was being stood up, they should have actually engaged in the local inhabitants to be a part of the militia, to say, okay, you're going to move there, but we need people to be a part of the militia. And we need to have this, you know, these standards and these processes and do this instead of creating a permanent cavalry. See, but it was so easy and everybody could just, you know, focus on getting their houses going and their crops planted and surviving. They didn't have to worry about, you know, sharing this responsibility that everybody was supposed to have. So right, wrong, or indifferent, the government, the child, literally convinced all of the parents that says, trust us, we're just going to do these things, and you'll be better off. And maybe they were for a little while. But when they have the ability to kill you, and they're actually doing that, I don't think you're better off anymore. I think we've kind of crossed that line to say this has become a nightmare. Because they are literally claiming they have unlimited authority. Now, that is not the government that was created. And this is why we were given from Madison and Jefferson exactly the exact process of what we need to do to peel this all back. So, again, it's now or never, folks. And it starts with using petitions. That's the initial process of interposition, calling out public servants and making everybody aware. Whether you like this or not, this is what has to happen. That means you have to take some time. You got to sign some signatures. And if you don't get involved and you don't help this grow, then you'll get to have a deep and heartfelt and very humbling conversation with your children and grandchildren as to why you couldn't take the time to save their liberty, to save the Constitution, to save the world. Folks, that's what's at stake today, saving the world. And so here's an opportunity to actually go in the annals of history as, you know, one who contributed instead of one who was ignored. I do not want to go into the annals of history that I was the one that was ignored. And I don't think you want that either. But it's not about what, you know, I want. It's about what you want. And so you have to start, you know, making that decision, you have to start doing those things that actualize what you really want. And so you're more than welcome to call. You're more than welcome to get started. And we'll kind of walk through some of this stuff. Because on Mondays and Wednesdays, I'm going to try to cover some of these important things, as well as the marketing. Because, you know, I've got a little marketing for you today. But the other two things that I always say is, if you believe in prayer, don't forget to pray. And don't hold back on calling on other people to join, creating the prayer circle, or joining in the prayer circle itself with other people. I want you to know, and I say this every day, the debt is fraud. Now, there are people that say, nah. Every time we elect these people, they're a long, long time ago, before they started spending recklessly, they convinced us and they basically started educating us and indoctrinating us that they had the power, they had the ability to do that. So the people at that time were being hoodwinked and lied to and deceived. It's only now when we're realizing that all of this stuff is fraud. So don't tell me that that's legitimate debt because, oh, well, we haven't done anything about it. So over the course of all the, no, that's a big mess. And when somebody gets hired by a corporation or somebody steps into government and they start writing checks and it gets discovered that this person was either embezzling money or doing bad things, you know, cohorting with and collaborating with the enemy, they get held accountable. Every person that's involved in this must be held accountable. That being said, we've got to take the measures in taking the government back before we can hold people accountable. Because I'm telling you, the court system is too corrupt. It is so corrupt there you cannot find justice in our court system. Whatever little bit of justice might be applied comes with tyranny with it. Because there's all sorts of things that are included in their ruling that they have no authority to do. So, now that we've covered the obligatories, let me dive into, actually, I'm still working, and hopefully, because last Friday we had Matt Hawkins on, I told you we'd get that interview, hopefully we'll have Chip Murray on, and we played some of his music before, and I don't know, maybe I'll come up with another song to play for you, but hopefully we'll have his coming up on a Friday or a Monday. But let me talk to you about this billionaire club. Now, I don't know how many. There's like less than 3,000 billionaires in the world. Less than 3,000. But there was a point in time when there were no billionaires in the world. So how did millionaires become billionaires? Because our currency got inflated. Every time our currency ticks up into an a little more inflation, the rich people take the profits and we fight for, you know, the scraps. And so everything that we do gets more and more expensive and harder to accomplish. The American dream is dying because of inflation, if it's not already dead. It's not dead because we still have the ability to take it back. I'm here to tell you that the billionaires should actually lose their shirts. They should lose most of their holdings because their holdings came from manipulation of our finances and manipulation of currency and subsidies, and all sorts of ways that they had been given advantages. There has been a cooperation and collusion between the government and corporations. I can tell you Bezos did this in the 90s with the CIA. I've said this before, where he was allowed to go unscathed and actually protected by government so he couldn't be delisted so that he could spy on you, his customers, and give all of your information to the CIA. So when we look at billionaires, I don't want you to think that these people offer anything good in society. Do you believe that we would, if all of the billionaires were gone, let's say we had a French Revolution, and these less than 3,000 billionaires were all killed, and, you know, there was no heritage or anything else that they would, you know, what they had was left behind, that it became autonomous. Do you really believe that we would, as a society, what we would do, and actually the problem is that there would be another uprising, not uprising, but another uplifting of a new class of billionaires. We actually have a caste system. We've created a caste system because government needs to collude with the elitists. So, what we need to do is we need to make it so that in your state, this has to be done at the state level, that there has to be a cap on your property holdings and your holdings, period. We are not to be a society where somebody can have influence over government. Other than the individual. But when you actually have somebody like Bill Gates that owns government of the world, world governments, then that right there is treasonous. Because he's actually operating a government that is affecting and ruling America. It's all unconstitutional, but these types of things should not be happening. There should be no monarchs in America. We talk about the 13th Amendment and the nobility clause. When we look at anybody that's a billionaire, how is that not a nobility clause? Oh, well, they don't have a foreign kingdom, but they've created their own, and they have created their own nobility, and they've used power and money to do that. I'm just telling you that this is the day of, you know, one of those things that we actually have to have the adult conversation, get all the adults together, and we sit around the table, or at least the key people, your representatives, need to have an open and honest dialogue. And this needs to be filmed so you can hear everything. You know, I actually heard, because I've said this before, this goes way back. You know, we could have kept pornography off of the internet by creating a .xxx. And my wife and I have been watching Law & Order, and that was actually brought up back in the 2010s, I think it was like 2009, 2008 maybe 2007, where they were talking about the .xxx. That idea actually came out in the 90s when the internet was just starting to, you know, go out, and they were creating these .coms and .govs, and they said, well, what are we going to do about this insidious thing called pornography? The reason why pornography is being just, why government is just looking away from this crap is because it is a multi-billion dollar industry. And as a matter of fact, Mark Erbach, in his book Believe, actually identifies the key Jews. He points out that these guys, the guys that own our porn industry, are Jews. And I don't hate Jews per se, but I do know that there are people of every race, culture, religion, faith, what have you, that are evil. And these people are parasites. That all being said, we have to start having adult conversations of how to clean things up, because we can get rid of this stuff. We just have to have the testinal fortitude to say, this has to go. If we're going to get back onto the road of enlightenment, we have to start getting rid of stuff, and we have to start injecting discipline. In other words, we need to start learning some simple terms like learning to be happy with what you have to be happy with, instead of wanting to own and controlling the world. No man should control the world. Only our divine creator and his only begotten son have that. When we start playing, when we the people allow somebody to become a monarch, we're just setting ourselves up to be, you know, hurt, damaged, killed, what have you, from despotism. So anyway, when we look at this billionaire club, this all has to be dismantled. And even the millionaire club really needs to be scaled back. As a matter of fact, we need to make it so that people no longer have the need for being a thousandaire club. And how do you do that? You have to stabilize your currency so the government isn't creating problems like a minimum wage and starting to create regulations to say you can only make so many of those. or you can only make these things and not those things. When you have a mercantile system where the government controls the production of everything, then we're living under a condition of manipulation and control. It's not a free market. And I know the free market is very reactionary, but that's okay. That's where, you know, people, you know, become well off and then they lose their shirts. That's okay. Because those are the natural lumps and bumps that life give us. But when government is doing it, when they have the ability to put their thumb on the scale, giving advantage to one person or one company and or other companies or a market sector to say, you know, electricity is going to be, you know, the way we're going to control you. And I'm telling you, when they're doing that, they are being despotic and they don't have any authority to do this. So let me talk to you about your favorite billionaire, because I got just a few minutes. Elon Musk seems to be the beloved billionaire of conservatives. Folks, he's not your friend. He's not the world's friend. He is a self-serving, maniacal man. When we look at what he has done, he has only proven that he is really not a friend of humanity. He is the enemy. When we look at some of the things he did, as he started off with Tesla, he did that because they already knew, because at the beginning of the 1990s with the Agenda 21, part of the process or part of getting there was controlling everything. And he saw that they were going to have to go into electrical vehicles and forcing everybody to have specific kinds of, you know, renewal. All of this stuff started coming up and bubbling up. Anybody that had visibility to this could see, and Elon Musk created Tesla, and he got billions. I think it's something like 5.4 or 4.5, 4.7. He got billions of dollars in subsidies. In other words, instead of just making money off of a free market, the federal government used your tax dollars to pay him billions of dollars for making those cars and putting them in the marketplace. And you got a cheaper car because whatever it costs, whatever the profits were, he had these guaranteed sales. And he played it right so that he was making them and didn't have excess where he had to lose his shirt. But it didn't matter because the government was going to subsidize whatever the cost. So he had a guarantee of a certain profit model. You can't tell me this guy, you know, Elon Musk, you know, did it the old-fashioned way, the natural way, and hard work and labor. He actually had a favor with government. And even though, you know, we see how he's critical and there seems to be this animosity between conservatives and liberals, I'm telling you that is a facade. You don't get into this club without being allowed and blessed in. We see Trump in the same kind of situation and position. We already know that Trump bragged about building the swamp and how he, you know, was involved in helping corrupt the public servants in Congress. But back to Elon Musk. Elon Musk gave us SpaceX. He's now giving us Starlink. And all of these things are mechanisms of massive, I'll just say, subscriptions, and taking us down this path where he becomes the ultimate provider in internet, providing in our space travel and so forth. And I'm here to tell you that he's the first one that's making a marketable robot that you can bring into your home to mow your lawn and to basically do your things, which means like becoming your personal chef. I mean, your robot will be able to do everything other than the fact that you may want to have two or three. But right now, they're not autonomous. And do you really want AI to be in your home? Because there may be a person behind it, but we'll be right back after this. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. As a matter of fact, if you're looking or you're interested in finding information about Optimus, that's the name, Optimus, and this Optimus and its autonomy, or actually the fact is that it's not autonomy. You know, what does that mean? That means that when you have this person, this robot, not this person, but this robot in your home and serving you, there will be people remotely that will be making some of the decisions for this robot, because it is not an AI robot. It is not autonomous. So just so you understand the differentiation, it means that it's dependent on some people doing this. Kind of a good thing, but eventually this thing will be upgraded to become full AI and or networked AI, if that makes sense. So they'll all start sharing information, just like a cloud. Folks, this is not good. This is not good. And there are just people, I have a hard time fathoming why people would want to put a chip in their hand or anything like that. Why anybody would want a robot and a network of robots working for mankind to end up subjugating us. Folks, I don't want to, let's just move on, because you can look all of this stuff up. At least Optimus is a story on G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News. Go check it out. My point is that every time I see Elon Musk surface in his absolute endeavors of what he's trying to do, what he's putting into mankind, it is very dark and nefarious, very dark and nefarious. Now, another story that came up on Need to Know News is the story about the DOD, this new DOD directive, where they now have the ability to use lethal force. And this is off Need to Know News. Quote, under the DOD directive 5240.01, the U.S. military has quietly been granted the authority to assist in domestic law enforcement activities, including the use of deadly force against U.S. citizens in certain circumstances. The updated directive expands the circumstances under which the DOD can assist law enforcement, including the use of lethal force. It allows for lethal actions under imminent threats. The definition of national security threats has been expanded, and the Department of Homeland Security has expanded its domestic terrorism threats. So, Alien and Sedition Acts, anybody that's criticizing the government, do you know anybody that's criticizing the government? Well, those people stand in jeopardy, and they're going to use whatever threats necessary, or I should say any force necessary, to silence them. Biden told us a few years ago they had the ability to actually start enforcing, using a lockstep approach and basically coming after us. Now, when you look at these, when you look at the directive, look at where the authority comes from and look at where we understand in the Constitution, where the Constitution clearly says that Congress shall have the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. Now they're going to use the military, this mercenary force, to actually do this. The standing armies, all of these enforcement agencies from the U.S. Forest Service, you know, the FDA, all of these different enforcement agencies are standing armies. They're all standing armies. They don't have to have a military title to them. If they have the ability to enforce federal law, then it's a standing army by definition of the framers. Because the only entity under the spirit and design of the Constitution that has the authority, constitutional authority, this has never changed, folks. The only entity is the militia. And they're not going to use the militia because they know you won't actually pull the trigger. They know you won't be, you won't have the stomach for enforcing the laws that they're going to demand enforced. And they have enough, I'll just say, fools to actually do their bidding for them. So as we dive down this path, go look at that on Need to Know News. The information is there, and you'll actually see where the orders are coming from. Are these orders even coming from Congress? Has there been an amendment to the Constitution? No. This is all assumptions of power. Remember, I started this whole show off with the kids, how, you know, these smart kids would start moving themselves, positioning themselves so that they could obtain more and more power and more control. And it was a very gradual process. These children were brilliant children, or I should say, this wasn't just a coincidence. This wasn't just we, you know, kind of fell into this. There has been a mastermind behind this, and this all goes to the work that was done in 1776 that was exposed by John Robinson in the conspiracy to destroy the governments and churches of Europe, or religions of Europe. If you want to read that, he talks about how this is all going to unfold, and that's what he was seeing in the 1700s. It's been expanded a lot because they just couldn't do it as quickly as they wanted to, but that's okay. With time, they caught up with new ways, methodologies, became more patient, because patience is, you know, a part of their plan. They got to be patient and allow us to create the opening so they can come in and seize control. So as we talk about all of this and this maniacal plan, we're at a point where a lot of people are trying to point towards this revolutionary point. And I'm here to tell you that that is not where we are. We have everything we need to take back our government. We have it all. But we just have to start working together in amassing the people. Not with guns, but with pens and paper. Our weapon is petitions. Our weapon is holding people accountable and the rule of law. Now, we can't use the rule of law in the existing court system until you take your state court system back. And you can do that, but you have to, before you can do that, you have to take your county back, your county representatives. And once you take enough of your county representatives back, then you can take your state back, which means that you can take your state and its courts back. But you have to get the representatives to finally wake up and realize that this is a Republican form of government. And so a few years back, I think it was 2021. I know it was getting ready for the 2020 election, I think. I started working on this concept of a Bill of Rights for the 21st century. And I think I started really exposing it after 2020. And I believe it was for the 2022 election that it really started coming forward. And it was part of the 2022 campaign. the biggest and some of the key things that we talk about in the Bill of Rights for the 21st century is making all elections local. In other words, right now, you have no, the local folks, local county has no control over the elections. In other words, people from all sources and every corner of the earth has the ability to reach in and affect your election. And that is not a Republican form of government. That is a democracy. And actually, it's not even a simple democracy. It's a global democracy. But let's look at what it takes to actually make all elections local. In accordance with Article 4, Section 4, the Constitution, to be in compliance with the Constitution, we have to have a Republican form of government. And the only way we can get there is we have to take control of the elections. And so we have to start understanding, you know, what is the election process? Because when you look at an election, is there such a thing as a national election? No. As a matter of fact, there is not a, you know, there's not a ballot printed from the national government that says everybody must vote for this measure. It is state-managed, state-ran. Everything is state and below. So when we look at senator, when we look at congressman, and when we look at president, who do we actually vote for the president in the national election? Well, everybody believes we do. But actually, you're supposed to vote for your electors who will choose the president. So in other words, the voting for and the support and the vote cast is literally for somebody that resides within that state. You're not voting directly for the president. Ah, but they want you to. Because as soon as you do, and what they're going to promise you is, if we can actually have a direct election for the president, then and get rid of this electoral college and use a popular vote, because that's what they're pushing, then it becomes a federal can maintain federal operated election. And that's what we saw this with CMR, Kathy McMorris Rodgers. She was trying to push these ideas of how the federal government could take over more and more roles and responsibilities to help everybody with this national election idea that they were selling. So when we start looking at this, making all elections local, and you start really understanding, even at the presidential, your electors are your local representatives, right? You're supposed to have an elector for your congressional district. So the key thing and the first thing you have to break down in understanding making all elections local is you have to create the area of election, an AOE, area of election. And so when you're looking at the area of election, for the Senate, that is a statewide race, right? Well, it could be divided. You know, half of the people of one state could say we're going to, you know, the state legislature could literally divide it to say the eastern side gets to vote for this senator and the western side gets to vote. Then you now have representation, supposedly, that represents these parts. But you've heard me already say that those senators can't even represent the people of the state, nor of the portion of the state, because the Constitution demands that they represent the state legislature. This whole concept of this, you know, the state selection of by the people, all that did was convince everybody that, oh, they don't have to give suffrage to their state legislature. And that's the furthest thing from the truth. Right now, we've already covered this deeply, and we're going to cover it quickly when we hit the 17th Amendment, that in Article 5, the state legislature's suffrage, their equal suffrage in the Senate, is protected by the Article 5 Amendment Protection Clause. In other words, no state legislature consented to surrender, and the 17th Amendment did not get. There's no language in there that says you will no longer have your state legislature represented for equal representation, nor did they redefine that the state legislature now meant the people of the state. It only changed the process and the selection process of the senator. It did not change their responsibility of who they were to represent. Ah, maybe they weren't smart enough, or maybe they were afraid to lay that out there. They just wanted to put it out there so that as you looked at it, you go, oh, okay, so this means that they represent the people. That's not the language, but that became the natural deduction. This is why and how the senators actually stopped giving the state legislature this representation. Maybe they knew about Article 5. They tried not to actually do anything to violate that. And so if we're not abiding by it, if the state legislature is not demanding, then, you know, poor them. More fool them. It's their own fault. And this is why you need to start waking up your legislature. There's a senator I know in Montana. I tried to talk to her. And this senator, I'm not going to mention her name, just doesn't want it, you know, doesn't care about this stuff. Because, well, it's another story altogether. But nevertheless, you know, when you look at these arguments and you look at these positions regarding the Senate and the state legislature, and more importantly, when we start looking at making the area of election delineated, then what does that do? Let's get back to the making all elections local. What happens when you delineate the area of election? Then you've now delineated who are the people, the electors, or the electorate, and who are foreigners. In other words, if you don't live in that county, you can't touch that ballot. Why? Because you shouldn't be able to vote on any of the tax measures or representations for the people of that county. If you do, then that's election fraud, because when you vote for a representative for the county commissioners, when you vote for, you know, the taxation of the people, you have no say over that. You have no right to have any say over that. A Republican form of government means that you're given and granted representation in your, where you domicile, where you live. So when we start actually laying this out and we start actually having this conversation of what is making all elections local, how do we save our elections? Well, we have to actually start peeling these things back from statewide elections and statewide ballots, and not allowing somebody, if somebody can't prove that they have residence in your county, then they can't touch that ballot. They can't have, they cannot cast any vote for the legislature that goes up into the legislature's house. If they can't prove they live within that legislative district, they can't prove that they live within the county for voting for the county commissioners. They have to prove, this has to be proven hardcore. Not just that they live in the state. See, what we've done with our election process is we've just created voters for the state. And if you end up getting that ballot, which is actually foreign influence, you have no right to be voting over those issues. A Republican form of government ensures and guarantees that a person only can vote and influence those things that they have the right to have that vote for. You don't have a right to tell us who you want for our senator. You don't have a right to tell us whether we're going to have taxes on our property or not and vote for that. You can't do that. But we have completely clouded this system. We've allowed this system and this fight because they've already, when they started going after and basically smearing the lines of the elections and they started moving everything, we lost sight of our Republican form of government. And this is how we've been functioning, acting, and operating in a democracy. Folks, whose fault is it? You tell me, whose fault is it that we do not have a Republican form of government? if you're not demanding your representation and you're not demanding protecting your representation, because when we actually start going down this area of election, remember, area of election is the physical or geographical area that the election encompasses within the boundaries of a state, city, county, district, or what have you. Each office, measure, initiative, etc., that will be on the voter's ballot must be delineated as to that area, and that person must be identified on their ballot that they can actually vote on that. I'm an advocate to say if you're not a property holder, you can't vote on taxation on property. That is just antithetical to one common sense and a Republican form of government. If you don't have property, you can't demand representation and taxation. Does that make sense? So those who do not reside within the area of election, permanently reside, you know, in other words, that is not their domicile, then they should have no ability to vote, period, whether it be for an office, a measure, initiative, representation in any form at all. This has to be considered foreigners or foreign influence regarding the election, and that they have no constitutional right to representation within the area of election. So when they actually show up and say, we got a satellite election, because they're doing this in Iowa, they're setting up at a campus, they're doing this. And to be clear, even though you may have a temporary residency at a campus, if you live within that state, then you should be voting for where you live, not where you're temporarily domiciled. In other words, you may be renting there, but that is not your permanent. When you leave, can we unvote that person in? No, you should be voting to where your domicile is. 9 times out of 10, that's where your folks are. And it has to be presumed that that's where you should be able to vote. See what happens, and this is how this has really created a huge problem with foreign influence, because they put these colleges, these universities out in a real rural area. Then they look and they go, you know what, we have more students that are living in, you know, on this campus than live in the entire county. We actually could seize control and undo the good things and the good people of this county. Let's do it. That's what they're doing to you. And I'm here to tell you that the courts will tell you otherwise. You need to be using petitions and getting those county commissioners to shut down and stand up and say, these people have no right to vote for anybody within this area of election. If they're not a permanent residence, in other words, their residency didn't come from this county, this legislative district, congressional district, what have you, then they can't vote to influence it. They can't even spend money. And that's the next step. That's the other thing we need to talk about. When we talk about foreign influence, to be clear, only those who reside within the area of election have a right to vote on that for the measures, initiatives, whatever you want to have. Actually, I would much rather be talking about not having initiatives and measures, because that creates democracy. Our legislators should have the authority to create the taxation necessary to do what we have delegated for them to do. The reason that they've done this is because they've been spending money on things that they have no authority, like welfare. I was just looking at the Wyoming Constitution. Welfare isn't mentioned other than 6 times. It is not mentioned that the state has the authority to regulate and administer welfare. Every context of the word welfare in the state constitution refers to a general welfare that they have to consider the welfare of all when they're looking at these issues for the roadways or what have you. It is not something that they have specific power and authority to create, manage, and regulate the welfare of an individual, corporation, or what have you. So, this is why we have to start learning the constitutions of where we live, as well as the U.S. Constitution, so we can start realizing what, why, and how they've actually been able to usurp these powers. If a foreign person, if a student lives or operates, works in your area, but they commute, right? They commute from a couple counties away into your town and or wherever they're from, and they say, well, you know what? I'm here all the time. I should be able to vote. Now, it's one thing if you own property, then, yeah, you should be able to vote on at least the land. Maybe your domicile is counties away. Maybe your domicile is, a far distance away. Maybe you don't even live in that state. Should you be able to protect your property and have a stake in voting to make sure that you don't have property taxes hitting your property? First off, we have to do away with property taxes. We've got to do away with it because it is, one, antithetical to our form of government. We have created government to protect life and private property. So when you all of a sudden can tax private property, then you have the ability to take it away. So how is it that government is protecting private property if they can tax it, put liens on it, and take it away from you? That's antithetical to why we've created them. And they've gotten their nose, it's like the camel's nose into the tent. Once the camel's nose comes in, the camel comes in and it pushes you out. So as we start looking at, this foreign influence, we actually have to start delineating exactly how these people who are foreigners should be able to function and should be able to operate. Can they contribute any money to a campaign within that area of election that they have no say in? Absolutely not. They should not be able to influence your election one iota. I want you to be clear, and you may hear a dog barking, but there's no harm being done. I'm just ignoring her. Anyway, so they're creating a problem when they actually can contribute. It's like when the Georgia or the Alabama senator races and California sent millions of dollars to get a Democrat in office. How is that legal, and or how is that even within our Republican form of government? Does California deserve representation out of another state? That's the same thing if the King of England wanted to buy, and actually that's exactly what the King of England did. That's what the monarch of England after the Civil War started pouring money and buying those people who were our electors. Or not our electors, our public servants in Congress, which is why, and this is why we're going to cover the Organic Act of 1871. That's one of the things we'll be covering after we get through the Constitution. There's a lot of other things that we need to cover, but we want to get as much as we possibly can onto your plate so that you, I don't want to necessarily overwhelm you, but that's what's going to happen. But once you have all of this, and once you can start digesting, you may not be able to eat it all at once, but once you start digesting it and it starts making sense, then you become the most dangerous person in your community because you actually know the truth and nobody can actually sell you a bill of goods anymore. You can actually say you have no right. This is all wrong. This is what has to happen. This is what the truth is. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.